And welcome back to Push to Talk with Magneto Mel. We are here with our ATC Hour now on EAA Radio, and I'm joined by Dan D'Ambrosio and Grant Anderson with the National Air Traffic Controllers Association. I always want to say the National Association of Air Traffic Controllers, which doesn't work with the acronym.
Well, actually, I mean, a little dyslexic, but 5 out of 4 controllers are dyslexic anyway.
So. Yeah, well, that's good to know. That's good to know. So when we get our altitudes, we might want to double check those.
Flight level 042.
Yeah, there you go. So today, I guess our topic, we're doing a few series of the Push to Talk, the ATC Hour, and today we're going to talk about the top 10 pilot mistakes of view from the tower. So as controllers, what would you say are on the head of that list? I'm looking for 10 here.
I can give you a little bit of a tease, but basically we're doing a forum today in the NACA Pavilion at 1 o'clock, which we'd like to get some folks out for. But obviously we have... There's things that some pilots do that sort of drive us crazy. I know there's things that ATC does that drives them crazy, and a good interchange of thoughts would be a eye-opening thing for all of us, I'm sure. From my perspective, sometimes the biggest pilot mistake is not having a plan B. One weather occurs, or a fuel situation, or routing, or equipment difficulty. It's not really, you know, they don't really know what they want, and we have to figure out something for them. Another thing that me personally has always driven me crazy is that I always felt that being the controller, it's my job. I own the frequency because I'm the guy who's got to tell everybody what's going on. And you know, the old phrase is I'm talking to 20 of you and 18 are separated. I need to talk. So if you're checking in, Listen that you have an open space to talk to. And secondly, if it takes more than 8 or 10 seconds to give your request, you need to break it up and just let me know that you have a lengthy request, because I might have a dozen things I need to take care of before I can get to that.
And once you're on the frequency, you got to kind of wait for them.
Oh, boy. Yeah, if there's a 30-second pause, you have no idea how far behind the controller gets at that point, just waiting. Okay, are you done? You're killing me.
Well, and the frequency isn't the only, I know what some people don't understand, this is a view from the tower, but very, very little of the flight takes place, you know, with the tower, obviously just the land, and we're dealing with centers and approach and departure controls. There's a lot more communication going on than mm-hmm. just you guys with, you know, you've got the D side and everything mm-hmm. else. And you know, when you've got handoffs, there's you got one in one ear and you got everybody else in the other as you're trying to communicate.
Well, that's one of the funny things.
Tell people a little bit about what's going on in your job.
Well, that's one of the bigger challenges, I think, for anybody trying to get into the air traffic field is dealing with the multitasking involved. Because, yes, you may be having that view from the tower or looking at a radar scope and talking back and forth with the pilots, but it's as controllers, we also are in communications with people around us, with landlines, hot telephone lines to various other controllers in different locations or centers, to coordinating things. We're making keyboard entries as we're talking and shifting around, and then of course there's somebody talking loudly in back of you, bothering you anyway. So you have to multitask. So normally, when a controller is speaking and saying something, they're actually looking somewhere else and thinking about the next move. And when you're reading back, we're trying to hear basically the relevant elements of the clearance, that's right, while we're actually typing or coordinating something else here. And you have to speak and listen at the same time and listen out of both ears. A third ear would be nice. It would be helpful.
Well, no, go ahead.
I was going to say is that from the center aspect, that especially now that we're short-staffed and that they combine up a lot of airspace now and certain times of the day, that we might be working 3 or 4 frequencies. And while a pilot might be listening on one frequency, I might be speaking to an airplane on another frequency, and the pilot might be responding to my instructions, and that other pilot can't hear the pilot responding, will step on top of, like he said, something that I need to hear.
Right.
An altitude readback or a course reroute or something like that, and I got to stop what's going on and give it again because of it was stepped on and I couldn't hear it. And if there was a mistake and then I didn't catch a mistake, I'd be held liable for it.
Right.
So just to give some more time for other pilots to respond, and if you don't hear anything, doesn't mean that they didn't respond. It just means that may not be on that same frequency as you.
And that's you mentioned your liability, and that's a completely different dynamic that I don't know if people understand. I mean, when you're in the plane, you're responsible for the life and safety of that flight. Yes, your PIC. But you guys feel a similar responsibility to a multitude of aircraft, and you're not actually on board. You have to get everything by proxy, you know, the communication aspect. So I would venture to ask, would you consider one of the top 10 mistakes not communicating at all with ATC when they should be? People that are afraid to talk, or...
Well, it certainly is certainly is an error. And we touched on this the other day a little bit on... hesitation to speak with ATC. And from a pilot's perspective, I know that some can be intimidated by ATC, but that again, we're here to help. That's what we're trying to do. So there's a balance somewhere there, Mel, of giving your life story just to chat and refusing to speak because you don't want to be a bother or you're intimidated. And I can't stress enough that it's our job to help, and we're happy to do it.
Right.
It's true. If somebody gets on the frequency and they're looking for flight following, and I don't have the time for them, because like you said before, there might be radio silence for a period of time because I'm in the middle of coordinating something. A lot of times, especially in an emergency situation, most of the time I'm spent on the landline calling other approach controls, telling them what they can expect. And for instance, the one that landed in the Hudson, I think he only spoke to the pilots in the aircraft maybe three or four times, whereas he was on the landline to every approach and tower control to find out where he can get the plane down. And that's a much longer conversation because the approach or tower controller has to tell him, well, I have to stop my traffic and let me see what I can get you.
Right.
So that's a much longer conversation than what's going on the radio. So a lot of people assume that there's nothing going on when in actuality I'm much more busier. Just because I'm not saying anything on the frequency, I'm saying everything on the landlines that you mentioned before.
And what center are you in?
I'm in Houston Center.
You're in Houston. Mm-hmm. And Center, you're going to deal with a whole different level of traffic and a whole different level of, I do want to say professionalism, actually, because you've got the people at those altitudes that are flying the aircraft that can be at those altitudes, which generally aren't your Cessna 152s. You're going to be dealing with...
We actually have a mix in Houston Center because I have about three airports that are non-radar airports that we actually work the traffic into in a uncontrolled field area.
And what are your thoughts on the dealing with the private pilot traffic versus the airlines versus your 135 operations?
It's all different. I mean, everybody has their own set standards. Each from airline to airline, their set standards is what way they operate their own airplanes. So,
in terms of the top 10 pilot mistakes, do we have some differences there?
Depends what spectrum you're working
on.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, if you're talking like on a professional, I mean, I can go like top 10 commercial pilot mistakes and versus 135 operators or 91 operators, and as far as like your VFR pilots and things like that, the most time that I notice is that, or the low level flying is that, especially in my airspace, there's a lot of military airspace out over the Gulf and things of that nature. They routinely file through warning areas, restricted areas, and MOAs that are active. And, that's a big problem for us because if they are active and we don't take care of or reroute the aircraft around it and they accidentally get in there, then it's just like if we had a deal or, because we're not responsible for the traffic inside that restricted air warning MOA, and we can't offer flight services to that aircraft once they enter that airspace. So we become responsible for anything that happens to the airplane while in that airspace.
Right. So we're going to take a quick break here, and we'll come back after just a few minutes here. And we're listening to Push to Talk with Magneto Mel on our ATC Hour, Craig Anderson and Dan D'Ambrosio.